Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show.
All right, hello, and welcome to the super fast bonus round, Roguecast. Yeah. So what happened is, DC released a big book, Batman Hush 2.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. This week, and in doing so, seemingly broke distribution. We got our books today on a Tuesday, which has not happened. I don't think we've ever had Lunars on Tuesday.
I feel like there's been one other time, but you know,
but anyway.
We almost always have these kind of prepped in advance, and as it happens, everything's running behind, and we haven't had time to read everything. We've read a little bit.
We did. Nick and I burned through some stuff.
Yeah.
But we didn't get to read everything we wanted to read, so...
Yep, and I've read a few strays.
I feel like this is on 1.8 or 2.5 speed, it's going to be that.
It's going to be a shorter episode. We're not going to have news. We're not going to have topics, even though we've all watched Severin Season 1, and we're going to talk about it maybe next week.
Yep.
And by the way, if you already play things back at speed and a half, then we're going to become
super
chipmunks.
Super fast chipmunks.
Yeah. Yep.
Dave loves the chipmunks.
I sure do.
All right. This is one of the biggest weeks of comics maybe... that we've seen in years.
Like, yeah.
It's a huge week for comics.
I mean, our stacks are gigantic.
So, lots of comics. Good week to come into the store, see what there is, because last week was also a huge week. There's all kinds of stuff.
But this is kind of that cool thing that there's something for everybody.
There is indeed.
There's indie books that are great.
Things for everybody.
Yeah.
What's a little bit of a kind of crazy headache for us can be exciting for you,
yes,
the reader. You know, come in and explore this vast explosion and tapestry of titles.
Indeed. Also, not a huge week for games, but there's a few notable things. Want to mention, this is not game related, but Invincible Compendiums.
There was
a run on Invincible right after the season ended. We had the sales we've never seen. Everyone coming in looking for these giant compendiums of Invincible, which they all sold out.
I think people wanted to start knowing what happens next, really desperately.
Well, as of today, as we record this, we have like a dozen copies of Volume 1, and three or four copies of Volume 2 and 3. So if you want to catch up on all things Invincible, now is your chance.
It is the time.
And there's been enough people wanting them, I would not be surprised if these are gone by the weekend.
Yeah, it would not shock me.
But we do have all those in stock. We also restocked the popular One Piece card game.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a new booster set that came out.
Yep.
As well as two previous existing boosters. So
and starters.
And some starters. And then we got Xanatar's Treasure, which is the latest in the blind dice bags, the ones that Sirius Dice does, the ones that you see on the counter.
They're the official Dungeons & Dragons dice.
Right. And the previous ones were all...
Azerarak,
yes.
Yeah.
These have been our super popular mystery bags of dice. Anytime we get them, they always will sell through several boxes, and then they're gone forever.
Mm-hmm.
But they always have, like, how many was it, like...
So
30,
there are 53 different dice sets.
Different possible
dice sets. And there's some that are like super rare, and they're all cool, and they all come with a dice bag, which is also pretty cool. There's also random, and a coin. And this time, some of the coins are actual coins from Waterdeep.
Right, like in the Forgotten Realms, the biggest city in the realms is Waterdeep, and this would be like the coins that the characters in the stories and the RPG would be using, which is very cool.
I opened mine yesterday. I always get one when it comes in. I got a cool looking set with like Mind Flayer or Beholder Skin.
Yeah, it was a cool texture.
And I lucked into two coins. You're only supposed to get one, but I had two coins. I got the Gold Dragon, which is the gold piece of the Forgotten Realms.
Yep.
And a Silver Nib, which is the silver piece.
Nice.
That's neat.
Yeah. Very cool. You can see on the side of the box what the different coins are.
I remember there's one that's like one of those infusion dice where they have like the little...
Yep.
objects inside
yep.
them, yep. and it was like a little beholder,
yep.
a little Xanathar.
Now that is, I think, a legendary set. So
yeah.
You gotta
right.
be lucky
these
to
are
get
the
these.
Rarities. Something there's something that has 24 karat gold on it.
Yes.
I don't know.
Anyway, these are about $20 a piece, and they're always great. And I think we all enjoy them.
Yeah.
In fact, I know that the staff. I think Nick and Dave maybe don't go in for it, but I always buy one. Serena always buys at least one. And Jeanette literally cursed when she saw them.
Yes. We don't let our employees go home with money.
I would let her go home with money. She doesn't let herself go home with money.
But who ordered it, Randy? Who ordered it?
That was
me. You knew what was going on.
All right. We got an RPG called Lovecraft-esque, which I think is an indie RPG using these sort of Lovecraft settings.
Yeah.
looks pretty cool. And another one called Urban Shadows, which is another one of these like dark fantasy, modern fantasy things. We got Tiny Epic Cthulhu. The Tiny Epic games are always different, but they always seem very popular.
Yep.
And then we got a game called Crafting the Cosmos, which I've not gotten a chance to look at. A two-player game called Floristry. The My Shelfie dice game. My Shelfie is where you're arranging a shelf.
It's like a Tetris.
The original is like almost a Connect Four, where you're building. Oh, okay. You're building your bookshelf. You're putting in different color-coded books and pictures, this kind of stuff, and make patterns. This is a dice game where you do the same kind of thing. It's a roll and write. I played this at BGG last year. It's a lot of fun. Nice. Really quick play game.
Cool.
If you're someone who likes arranging bookshelves, and the odds are good if you're listening to this podcast, you are. it's a fun theme as well. We got the party game May Contain Butts. I don't know what the game is about, but I do know this.
I think
it may contain butts.
I think you're trying to figure out which butt goes with which animal.
It has like actually great cartooning art on it. Like, it reminds me of a good web comic. These are mostly animals, like a cat or a squirrel butt or something like that.
Yeah. Not hyper realistic humans. Does this butt go to?
That's the not safe for work version. That's coming.
Colonoscopy the game.
And then we got a party game that is probably built just for me. It's called Top Tier, and it's based on lists. You make a tier. So, example, who would be best at fighting a bear? And who would have the most unread emails in their inbox? And then you get contenders, and you got to rank them.
Are the contenders like celebrities?
I'm sure they are. Yes.
I'm curious if it'd be like fictional characters like Rocky and
it's probably
Papa Smurf.
It is probably a mix. You write them on there. So there's like this one says Taylor Swift, Elvis, Boba Fett, Boromir, Bill Gates.
Oh, you
Sherlock.
Know what? I kind of want to play this.
This
game.
Looks super
fun. That sounds
fun. Yeah.
I'm going to put Papa Smurf on one of them.
Yeah,
Papa Smurf. You think he's pretty good at making lists? I think he's the only organized guy in the whole village.
It's true. See, this is the game. This is how the game.
This is how it would go. All right.
We got Wandering Galaxy, which is from... It's a Crossroads game. These are guys that do, like, Dead of Winter.
Yep.
They have one called Freelancers, which was post-apocalyptic fantasy adventures.
Mm-hmm.
It was very fun, very chaotic. It has an app that tells you the story. So it's got like an interactive storytelling thing, and you use the book to go to different places and that kind of thing. I played this at BGG. It was super fun. Wandering Galaxy is the space version, where it's essentially Firefly. You are members of a ragtag starship crew looking for fame and riches, and you set off on a campaign. So this is a mix of like board game and role-playing game.
Okay, cool. That
sounds, you build a character.
That sounds fun.
Freelancers was a blast, and this looks like the same kind of thing. I thought it might be the guy who designed the other one, but it is a guy who did Mice and Mystics and Stuff Fables, both of which are in the same vein.
Okay.
I'm excited to try one of those games at some point.
Yeah.
We got the tactical superhero game Freedom 5.
Yep.
Based on the Sentinels of the Multiverse universe.
Yeah. They have cool, like, for people who are longtime superhero readers, that, you know, anytime you can see good world building in other properties, like for games like Champions back in the day and present versions too, and I'm sure Mutants and Masterminds and the Sentinels of the Multiverse, clearly made by people with a lot of love for the genre. This looked fun. This is I guess put together super teams competing for
co-op strategy game.
Okay, taking out the bad guys.
You manage multiple crises throughout the city of Megalopolis.
You know what else it reminds me of? Freedom Force, that video game that if you played it, you probably enjoyed it.
Yep.
It was a dope game in the 90s.
And then we got three things from Warhammer 40K, their role-playing game.
Yes.
We got the Daemons and Heretics book, which is their monster manual, essentially. We got one that I don't remember what the name of it was. There's another book, The Absolution or something like that. And then we got a starter box called Imperium Maledictum.
Yeah, I believe this uses the same concept as their first one when they first did a 40K role-playing game like a decade ago, which is, say, you're like an Inquisitor's team.
Yes.
And that's, I think, a particularly good format for 40K because these guys have like a kind of high-level clearance.
Yeah.
To go
they
around.
They can call in a, what's it called, Exterminatus?
You know, you can't actually do that. Like, the Inquisitor you work for could.
Yes.
And I don't know.
You have to talk him into it.
Randy, when you get to level 20... Also, yeah, you know, if you try and do a fast talk roll,
yeah, you make a fast 20, talk. You're like, what if we?
They have to exterminatus the planet.
You're like, look, we ran into a space dragon. He's too powerful for us. we need to exterminate the entire planet.
Space dragon.
I don't know.
Okay. It's a chaos space dragon. Randy,
it's a chaos
obviously.
Space dragon. No, you're right.
But yeah, you have a lot of power, and you can. They're good investigator teams.
Yep.
And I imagine this is a good box starter set. So yeah. If you've been looking to get into try the 40K RPG, it is there. There is an option.
There it is. And there it is.
There it is.
All right. Let's talk about this giant week of comics.
Yep. Okay.
Let's start with the newest Absolute book. The first one that's a mini series that we know of,
yep.
Right?
Yep. Six-issue mini.
Absolute Martian Manhunter, which yep. Nick read and really liked, and I think Nick has been burned by Dave and I both being skeptical.
That's true.
Of things.
I have been.
And he was like, you guys are probably not going to like it. And I think we all liked it.
Yes.
Quite a bit. I don't know if it's my pick for the week. It might be. It's really good.
This is written by Denise Camp, who, if you read last week, the Assorted Crisis Events.
Yep. He's sold out. Yep. Has second print coming.
Also writing the Ultimates and several other books.
Yep. It's been a while since I've read a book where the art was so integral to kind of like the concept.
Yeah.
And the concept here is that you're kind of getting in the head of somebody who actually feels alien.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, he like thinks alien to the point that like, although he is living a life also as a human, as a, what, like working for like the FBI.
The FBI. Yep.
Doing a stochastic terrorism division.
Yep. Yep.
Do you know what stochastic terrorism is? Or like,
is it blowing up Teslas?
It is more like when you, it's the, what's that famous phrase, will no one rid me of this meddlesome priest?
Oh.
It's that. It's when you say like, boy, this guy sure is a problem for me, and you let other crazies do their job for you.
Oh, it's like what the president does.
It's what the president does, yes. So we can only hope that Martian Manhunter will finally get to the bottom of this. A lot of Martians are saying he needs to get to the bottom of this. But he's got like a wife and kid.
Yeah,
it
just,
seems
that's
like
new.
He has integrated with the world, but he also, she's like, you're distant. There's something off about you. And we get inside his headspace, and it's an alien place.
Yeah.
And the visuals of the story are alien to go with it. Yeah, they have these splashes of like prism. Everything goes through like a color prism of weirdness.
Yeah, this is Javier Rodriguez, who we love.
Yeah, he's history, this is really like
history of the Marvel Universe.
It's his book.
It's his book. But Randy, you I think rightly said, or maybe you had written, Nick had talked about this while I was away, that it felt like a kind of like a Vertigo book.
For sure, that's what it felt like to me.
I agree. You know, kind of like, you know, the old Grant Morrison Doom Patrol days, like when you're like, how is DC putting out something this weird?
Yeah,
but like, it's not like it's not approachable. It's like,
no,
there is a story. Yeah. And there's like, it's not like, I don't know what happened.
I actually found it easier to interpret than sort of Crisis Events, which I liked, but was a little lost.
Was a little scattered, yeah.
This, I'm like, no, I see, I kind of think it was doing, there's questions raised.
Yep.
It's funny because Lemire wrote Flash, but this felt like a Jeff Lemire book in some ways, too.
Yeah, that's true.
Or a Grant Morrison book. Like,
it builds, even in the first issue, to an interesting kind of payoff of the sort of wild, the way his senses interpret the world are truly bizarre, but it actually builds to this really cool scene at the end of the story where things sort of come together.
This is, as much as I've been enjoying the Absolute books, this is the one that I will probably buy. If it keeps up at this level, I will buy this one in hardcover when it comes out.
Well, you know, they've all had good art, but like, again, I've rarely read a comic where the art is as integral to the story as it is here.
Yeah, this was really, really good.
So, yeah.
Batman.
And I kind of like that it's a miniseries, too.
Yeah,
me too. It's so weird, it might be a lot as an ongoing, but as a miniseries, heck yeah.
Batman Hush 2, taking place in Batman 158 to either 164 or 180, whatever now.
Kind of the same format.
There are rumors it's going to extend to 12.
As the original Hush, in the sense that it takes place in the normal comic pages, not as like a miniseries.
Yep. So it is Jeff Loeb, Jim Lee, Scott Williams on inks. It is the original creative team coming back. I think the letterer is different, so you know. Oh no, same letters, same colors.
I was about to say, this letterer looks like trash.
So anyway, Batman faces off with the Joker. The Joker seems to get into some trouble, and turns out, and this might be a bit of a spoiler, Hush is involved.
That's true.
Anyway,
there's some like weird mystery stuff going on, which is the kind of thing Jeff Loeb likes to do.
There's
Loeb
a couple,
likes to use the whole bat.
There's a character we haven't seen in a little while who shows up. Like, he definitely does. There's a new character that shows up. He definitely likes to play with all the toys.
Yep.
So if you liked Hush, Hush 2.
Exactly.
Still hushing.
Still hushing. There's a DC Black Label that is listed as story consultant James Gunn, but is written by Rex Ogle and Tim Seeley. And it is a double feature. Peacemaker presents The Vigilante and Eagly. So this is very much the TV versions of these characters.
It's right.
The further story of them. And it is as over the top and hilarious as the show, I think.
Nice. Yeah, it makes sense to bring in Gunn too as like kind of like to oversee that project.
Yeah.
I thought it was fun. And it has really nice art. I forget who this... Oh, it's Mitch Gerads.
Oh.
Is Mitch Gerads the old...
Mr. Miracle.
And Matteo Lolli does the second. He also did, like, the Mr. Miracle or something. I think these guys are both worked with Tom King recently.
I'm sure.
I also remember that the last... The other Peacemaker miniseries that they did recently had some really good art.
Yeah.
What was that? One of those UK artists or something?
Oh, yeah.
It real was, detailed.
And it was Kyle Starks writing.
Not Chris Weston. But it was somebody kind of like that.
Yeah. Anyway, this is a 5-issue miniseries, and I liked the first issue quite a bit. We've got the first of Marvel's one-shots with Godzilla. Godzilla versus Fantastic Four, which is...
It's kind of a fun throwback story, at least conceptually. The idea, like, they don't ever explicitly set a year in it, but
no,
it,
but it feels
clearly
like
within, like, the first year or two of the FF. It literally faces them off with Godzilla, but there are some... I'm going to say some very kaiju monster twists and turns in it.
There's a twist involving a big Fantastic Four villain that I thought was pretty clever.
And don't be shocked if possibly there's a bit of a team-up that happens somewhere in there, too.
It's written by Ryan North, who's writing One More Under Doom and Fantastic Four. It's
but he's
kind of
emulating, like, the Stan and Jack style.
For sure.
There.
And it has art by John Romita Jr.
Yep.
I'll be curious to see what the other one-shots look like, because... To me, this should be a mini series where they just like keep telling different, like it keeps accelerating.
Right.
But I think they're all going to be standalone one shots.
I believe that is the case, unless the next one acknowledges that this happened, which would be kind of an interesting way to do it. And it was like, well, now we're doing a story set in the 70s, and like, oh yeah, 10 years ago, Godzilla first appeared. That if they did that, that'd be cool.
Yeah, it'd
but,
be fun.
But to the best of our knowledge, that's not the plan. We'll see.
I will say what I do wish. I wish that this was, and I know everybody knows like it. I wish it was in the Monarch universe.
Oh yeah. Because
I want Monarch and Shield and all that kind of stuff.
Geez,
but
yeah.
That's what I want.
You love the guys in like a floating ship.
I
or
do
something.
Love the guys in a floating ship. And I love the
Hollow
Earth.
I wish it had Batra. I don't see how the story can possibly go on without him.
Anyway, it's I'm curious to see what more they do, and I thought this was a decent, fun issue if you like Godzilla.
I hope that in the Spider-Man one, that Godzilla's tail just whacks him. He goes like 100 miles and dies. At that. It's like over in about 2 pages.
So you wish for the death of Spider-Man?
Yes.
You want Tom King to write it?
Yeah. He's an animal-hating Tom King.
Be prepared to be shocked. I liked a Deadpool book this week. This is Deadpool versus Wolverine, Slash 'Em Up. It is Christos Gage writing, which had a lot to do with it. I really like Christos Gage. And it's basically Deadpool and Wolverine are in Madripoor hunting a piece of gadgetry for different bosses, and they fight over it. That's it. And then they team up, and then they fight some more.
It's a one-shot, right?
It's a one-shot. It's got the same sense of humor and the same over-the-top violence as the show, as the movie, I think.
Yeah.
And if you like that, you'll like this. I think this was done as a digital to tie into the movie.
I think so, too.
Out of curiosity, someone who is a citizen of Madripoor, are they a Madriporan? Madriporite? Madriporite?
They're just the Madripoor.
I mean,
unless they're the Madri-rich who live in Hightown.
Do you know the answer to the question?
I don't
know
the
real
answer. No.
This is not like a new nation, Randy. It's been around since the 80s.
Look, if you're trying to call me out for not being sensitive to the needs of the Madriporians, you've done
I'm
it.
I'm going to guess Madriporians, but I'm going to...
Congratulations, sir.
I'm going to look at the Wikipedia while you proceed.
You have
onward.
Exposed my ignorance about the Madriporians.
Never talk to me about that island nation again.
And because you can never not have enough Deadpool books, there is another Deadpool book.
This one I didn't like.
There we are. Finally, Randy's back.
Pool Illuminati. It is a multiverse full of Deadpools.
Like the movie.
I heard that they have to like recruit our dumb 616 Wade Wilson.
They do, yes.
And wackiness ensues.
Yeah, if you were to tell me, Randy, I found a way to make hell comic books hell for you, every version of Deadpool would be the way to do it.
Sure.
But if you are a person who likes Deadpool and wants more Deadpool, Pool Illuminati.
There you go.
We have Patrick Horvath, who burst onto the scene last year with
Beneath the Trees Where Nobody Sees.
Beneath the Trees Where Nobody Sees, a Animals Richard Scarry meets Dexter
serial
killer book we all loved.
If you don't know who Richard Scarry is, then just substitute Winnie the Pooh in, but it is more like Richard Scarry.
I think that was my favorite thing that I read last year.
It's pretty close.
It's super good.
And this is his standalone. This is the second thing he's done.
It's a one shot.
I have a feeling he actually did this before Beneath the Trees.
I could see
that. But it got published after. It is a one shot that Nick, I believe, correctly tagged as the reverse Hunger Games.
Yes.
I will say this is battling for my favorite book of the week.
It's really fun.
There's a level of humor, but also I just think the setup and world building is interesting.
So let's say what we mean by reverse Hunger Games.
Yep.
It's not that the games come to you.
No.
But rather that instead of the poor being the ones
to,
who are subjected to it, it's the ultra rich.
The ultra rich battled out in the event in the arena.
And it's like
to
if
keep,
they don't
to keep
mind,
their money,
and the loser who dies gets all their money donated to
the global
welfare thing.
Right.
Yeah.
It seems like if they you can like pay like some stiff fee to not go into the lottery for this.
Right.
But a lot of the egos of these people seem to be such that they're like, I'll take my chance. And then if they go into the arena, they're like, okay.
As you can imagine, there's a kind of fun spectacle of the whole of it all. It's nice to see the uber rich getting their comeuppance.
Violent comeuppance.
Yes.
Like sort of Garth Ennis level comeuppance.
But I will say there are two characters in here that I felt like they were fleshed out enough that I thought they were good characters.
Yeah. This is both a solid fun read. And a catharsis you probably need right now.
Yes.
And also has that usual great Horvath art.
Well, if you enjoyed Gladiator 2, there was a for sure Gladiator vibe.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
Too.
Yeah.
Like, it's straight up.
It's
like,
also,
they go into an arena. It's not like it is
out
in the woods.
No,
like,
it is an arena.
You're in an arena with different weapons appear. And
it's
stuff.
Also good to see that Patrick Horvath might not be a one hit wonder.
Yeah.
He's got some other things to say.
Yeah.
So I'm excited for that.
I dug the hell out of this. This is probably my pick for the week.
Although, the next one is
another possibility. This is called a Rook spy thriller, by the way.
Yeah.
It's called We're Taking Everyone Down With Us. And no, it is not by James Tinian.
No.
It's by Matthew Rosenberg.
Yep.
With art by Stefano Landini. I don't know where that artist came from, but the art is gorgeous.
It is.
And it's about a little girl, teenage girl, maybe? No, she's a preteen.
Okay.
Who is... She seems to be living on a deserted island, being her playmates are robots, and her father might be a Bondian supervillain.
Okay.
And she finds her way into, like, a spy who seems to be captured.
Yeah, it felt like kind of I'd say all these reverse things, but it felt like a reverse Johnny Quest. But the art is gorgeous. I thought... It was an interesting...
Basically the little kid of the bad guy?
Yeah,
the little kid of the bad guy.
But she doesn't, like, we're seeing it from her point of view, so we don't really know. When she runs into the spy, it's like, she's trying to tell her dad's a bad guy, and she's like, for her, it's like, he's been kind of distant, but he's her dad.
Yeah. Even though he's kind of an ass the entire time, a little holier than thou.
But he seems like whatever he's building, he thinks is going to save the world.
Interesting. And he has an army of AI robots that are kind of funny and that she plays hide and seek with.
Yes.
It was just one of those unexpected titles
that sounds like a cool concept. I like it.
I really liked this first issue. I think it was good.
And like you said, the art by Stefano Landini is phenomenal.
Stefano.
Then we've got You'll Do Bad Things, which seems to be a serial killer.
Also sounds like it could be a James Tinian title.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think it's about a couple of serial killers, if I remember this correctly. But, it is. It's an interesting sort of dark book. Another really beautiful artwork on this one. I read it a little while back, and I don't entirely remember what happened in it, but I know it is. It's like if you like the serial killer type books, this would be one to check out.
If you're one of those freaks,
and I am. we've got Bitterroot: The Next Movement. For those of you who don't know, Bitterroot was a thing set in I think like the 30s, and it's about a black family that fights. Monsters, basically. They call them the Jinyu.
Did I read correctly that, like, the monsters are actually, like, cause some of the problems? Like,
yes.
racial tensions and things?
They kind of increase racial tensions and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
There's some metaphor in there, for sure.
Yep.
But this family fought them with, like, gadgetry and that kind of thing. And now, a generation later, they are facing them in 1964 during the civil rights is about to be passed.
Mm-hmm.
This opens with the monsters killing a bus full of freedom riders, and the Sangaree family goes down to investigate in Mississippi, and finds the FBI as well as a not friendly local sheriff, which you would expect in 60s Mississippi.
Yeah, sure.
It's done by David Walker and Chuck Brown and Sanford Green. They did the Power Man and Iron Fist book.
Yep. Good creative team.
It's really interesting. I'm glad to see it back.
Didn't David Walker do the Shaft comic too?
He did do the Shaft comic, which was great. Yeah.
Has he done Bitterroot for the entirety of the run?
Yes, they've been the creative team the entire time.
Okay,
there are three trades and one hardcover, I believe.
I might need to go back to that because I do like those creators.
When I sat down and read it, I really enjoyed it. And I definitely needed a second go at it. Because it is a little dense.
Yeah, you were saying the trade paperback was the way to go for you.
Yeah, for sure. Universal Monsters has their fourth book, I think.
Yes, fourth book.
The Mummy by Faith Erin Hicks, colored by Lee Loughridge. Faith Erin Hicks has done a bunch of stuff. I can't remember what any of it is, but I like her art. I like her writing.
Mm-hmm.
This focuses on a young girl who her father is British, her mother's Egyptian, and her father is doing a dig, and somehow she is going to tie into the mummy. For all I know, she's going to be the reincarnation of Ankh Sunamun.
Yeah,
maybe. Did she back in the day do the what do you call it? The Wrinkle in Time adaptation?
Yes. No. That's
somebody else.
Okay. Yeah, that's somebody else.
Okay.
No, she did. She did the Last of Us comic, actually.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yep. Looks like she's also worked on some Avatar books.
Yes. Yeah, Avatar for sure.
YA stuff called Brain Camp.
She did a trilogy at
Pumpkinheads
at First Second that was the Broken City or something.
Oh,
like
that.
Nameless
that
City.
One, that
the Nameless City. City. Yeah. Yeah.
I remember Pumpkinheads because there's a bit of a character named Dave who's out at the pumpkin patch gets snubbed and they're like, "See you never, Dave," or something like that. And I was like, "Oh, why they got to be that way?"
So I thought this was a really strong first issue of the Universal Monsters. And I think, you know, Dracula was the one to beat.
Yeah.
And I think this is pretty good.
But yeah, I for sure want to read this.
We got a couple copies of a book from Mad Cave Studios, a smaller publisher, written by Chris Condon, who did That Texas Blood and Enfield Gang. And Ultimate Wolverine. This has art by Gigi Schall. I don't know who the artist is, but it's really pretty. And it starts in the Hollow Earth in the 1800s and then jumps into the 1980s with a couple of teenagers who I'm betting are going to discover the Hollow Earth stuff.
That's interesting. The solicit I read made it sound like teenagers exploring a haunted house, but it may be a haunted house because something from the Hollow Earth got into
it. They're exploring a haunted cavern.
Haunted cavern?
Yes.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. They fall at the end into a haunted cavern.
Man, I hate when that one happens.
Me too. It's the worst. And then we've got okay, so that's a lot of this jumping on points. We're not quite done, but that's a lot of the big new stuff from various publishers.
Yep.
X-Man Hunt wraps up this week with X-Man Hunt Omega,
yep,
which is written by Gail Simone, and I'm going to mispronounce her name.
Ayodele?
Maroa Ayodele, who is writing Storm.
And this is the conclusion of the storyline where everybody was kind of after Xavier.
Yep.
Yep.
There were, people who've read X-Men for any length of time are familiar that sometimes the writers don't have him quite as the super squeaky clean, relatively squeaky clean father figure of Patrick Stewart in the movies.
Correct.
But more as a guy who's well-intentioned but has had some transgressions. And he's had one of those transgressions in this.
Yeah, in the Krakoa era, he actually murdered someone. There's an explanation for, like, maybe he didn't, that, like, they were clones or something else. But,
right.
But that's
kind of... not even, like, imprinted clones, but, like, blank clones.
Any rate, this is also the X-Men Civil War, because the X-Men and the Uncanny X-Men are differing on how to deal with it.
Yep. So things kind of come to a head and set up an interesting new status quo that will launch a new title.
Launch a new title for Jonathan Hickman, yeah.
Yep.
And then 1-1 Under Doom continues this week. The new one is Doom's Division, which takes the South Korean team Tiger Force.
Yep.
And they now are working for Doom and all the mixed emotions that implies. I actually really like the Tiger Division team. The one people would know is Luna Snow, because she was in Marvel Snap. She's in Marvel Rivals too.
Yeah.
And she's like a YouTube streamer.
Huh.
She's like a K-pop star and all this stuff, as well as being a superhero. And it's a fun team. And this is a lot of them dealing with, you know, well, we're...
They're, like,
you know,
the going to be made to, like, enforce Doom's will or whatever, yep. right? And,
well, and
I think they're not super into it.
The interesting thing is, I guess Sunfire is leading the resistance in the sort of the right. Pan-Asian area, so they're going to be placed up against him.
Yeah, I thought that was a cool idea.
Yeah. I really like this issue. And the writer is someone I don't know. I'm blanking on the name now because I can't... They don't put it anywhere until the end credits now. There we go. Yoon-Ha Lee, who I think is a, like, novel writer, maybe?
Okay.
The art is by Mingqiu Young and is really nice. I thought this was a fun team book. I liked it quite a bit. Fantastic Four number 30 is a tie-in. This deals with what happens at the tail end of One World Under Doom last week,
mm-hmm.
Which you, if you see the cover, you'll know what it is. And I think this was a really good sort of human story. North has done a lot of sort of weird science-y stuff.
Yeah.
But this gets to the heart of one of the characters and what happens when he doesn't feel like himself anymore. He goes to a very surprising person for help. It explores sort of family stuff. And I really thought this was an excellent issue. I think what North is doing with Fantastic Four is top-notch here. Doom Academy number 2, which is Strange Academy being turned into Doom's Academy. Thunderbolts Doomstrike, which is the Thunderbolts of... Kind of a weird... There's some stuff going on in the Marvel Universe I didn't know about, because Winter Soldier is now called The Revolution.
Sure.
And Sharon Carter has taken on the mantle of the Destroyer. The World War II era Destroyer, because she's got, like, some kind of sword cane thing. She's operating out of what used to be Austin, Texas, but is now called Free City. So, like, all kinds of crazy stuff that has happened.
So, see, there's a new Citizen V.
There's a new Citizen V. There is John Walker gets drained into it, and they also bring back a character from Hellhunters. Basically, this is them trying to operate against Doom's various things as an insurgent group. It's pretty dark and espionage-y, and I'm kind of digging it, to be honest.
Okay.
Red Hulk number 2 continues the prison break thing.
Yep.
Really good. Also has Machine Man and Deathlok, and I'm enjoying this quite a bit. And then... besides the other One More Doom, we've got... Well, we had two Absolute books this week.
Right.
Because we also get Absolute Wonder Woman.
Man, that's a big week.
We also have two Ultimate books. Ultimate Spider-Man and Ultimate X... Or Ultimate Wolverine.
Yep.
Absolute Wonder Woman is worth noting, by the way. We all really like this book. It's got a new artist who I thought was a pretty solid fill-in.
Yeah, I
not
think
on the same level.
I just think they're just doing a couple of issues.
But this is kind of she faces off with one of the gods and tells a story of interfacing with one of the Titans. And I really like this version of Wonder Woman, and I really like what they're telling the story.
Just based on what I had read in the previous ones and the way, like, say, Circe was handled and
yep.
Hades and all that stuff in those,
yep.
Makes me want to see kind of anything else that Kelly Thompson is doing with, you know, Greek mythology.
Yeah, for sure. We get the penultimate issue of Your Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man, which has been good,
a nice companion to the animated show, which is great.
Yep, enjoyed that. I wish it was all available. Unfortunately, only number 1 is available right at the moment. But number 4,
we gotta be coming up on a trade before too long.
They reprinted Marvel Fanfare number 15, and it's a facsimile.
Yep.
And I couldn't figure out why, and then I realized, oh, it's April Fool's Day.
Oh, and this is about a sort of prank war
between
Human Torch and the Thing.
You say that, Dave, but it's mostly Torch pranking. Pranking the Thing
right,
over and
like
over and over
Ben
again.
Trying to survive the Torch's pranksterism.
Yes. There's also
but the big thing is also that is written and drawn by Barry Windsor Smith, one of the
creative.
Iconic artists ever since he became the first Conan artist ever in like the 60s.
Yep.
And then like a lot of people in the 80s knew him as like a quintessential Wolverine artist because he did Weapon X.
Yep.
And did a lot of great, you know, stuff with like Lady Deathstrike and some fairly gory X-Men issues, like wildly gory, really, for what you could do
he
in the 80s.
A very sad Ben.
Yeah. Feral number 11. This is a new story arc. They did a promotion to sort of get some more copies into our store. And if you're curious about this book, that is basically cats in a zombie apocalypse. And the zombie apocalypse is actually rabies.
Right.
This is like...
Is it regular rabies or is it some kind of
heightened
rabies?
It's a heightened rabies.
Sort of, but like I think it's rabies for the... Like, it's how it would be if you were animals having
right,
to deal
they're portraying
it
like...
Like a zombie
You know,
apocalypse.
They've been found by these, you know, as, you know, like by rabies, like zombies.
Yeah.
But there's a start of a new storyline, so
new storyline.
You could give it a test sample here. see what's going on.
And then TMNT Naruto number 3, which came out a lot faster than 2 did.
You say Naruto or is it Naruto?
It's Naruto. I don't know.
I heard people saying that for a while, but then it seems like I've heard more people lately saying Naruto.
Anyway.
And those are like fans.
It came out this week.
Yeah.
And then
people seem to like this.
Yeah, they do. And then a new issue of Justice League Unlimited.
Yep.
That's my giant stack.
Is
I know
it the
I
missed finale some stuff. To Justice League Unlimited's
no.
first arc?
Nope.
Okay.
Still going. I know I missed Kids because I didn't grab that one.
New Garth Ennis one shot.
If you know of Garth Ennis's Twisted Brain and you like it,
you'll like this.
There's a weird one shot where everybody's kids that are under 1 year old suddenly transform into what it seems like it might be creepy, distorted adult versions
yes.
of themselves. And you know, chaos ensues, and it's a standalone, so that the mystery is resolved in the story in the graphic novel. It's like a little mini graphic novel.
Jonathan Hickman's Wolverine Revenge finishes up.
Oh, that's the final issue.
Yep. There's another issue of Superman, the Josh Williamson, that was really good.
Uh-huh. That's a cool cover.
Yeah.
Good looking Superman.
Rick Remender's The Season hits the third issue.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was also an issue of Uncanny X-Men that focuses mainly on Gambit and kind of his backstory, and a story from his past.
There's a scene in it where he shows you how to, eat crawfish, right?
Yep.
Yep. Or rather, he's teaching the newbies at the X-Men
yes.
how to do it. But I was like, oh, that's a pretty well-drawn version of it. The only other thing I would add is that I've been continually liking the Patchwork Girl of Oz, the Image Comics doing the adaptations of Oz books from Frank Baum from back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
there's a new issue. So there we go.
I think, there's some trades and graphic novels and hardcovers. So Batman Dark Age, which is the Mike Allred follow-up to Superman Space Age.
Yep, yep. Trippy Bruce Wayne in the 60s. Kind of, I think he was like...
He hasn't beat like Lenny Bruce, right?
Yeah, among other things, he meets Lenny Bruce early
they
on.
They don't merge into Lenny Bruce Wayne, unfortunately.
Oh, man, that would have been something. But he also... he's kind of like directionless in his anger in this. He doesn't have like the focus of I'm going to fight crime right away.
Mm-hmm.
And so instead, in his teens, he's like this wayward troublemaker
yeah.
and stuff like that. And he's kind of unmoored. And this is about sort of the weird stuff that happens to him in like the 60s and onward.
We also got Captain America Winter Soldier, the premiere edition. This is our third of the Marvel, their answer to the compact editions DC
yep.
does. This is a good run. This is the Ed Brubaker, Steve Epting.
Which one is this? This Cap?
Captain America Winter Soldier.
Oh, man, yeah. It's like some pretty amazing stuff.
Yep.
And like probably, I would say, the best art Steve Epting has ever done. And
agreed.
That's talking about a really great artist.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. Nightwing Volume 7 comes out in soft and hardcover as the finale of the Tom Taylor run.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I really liked that run. I thought the finale was great. My only complaint with it is I wanted more of it.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be probably one of those legendary runs. He was on it for, 3 years or more?
Yeah, something like that.
And with a fairly consistent artistic partner and all that
yep.
stuff, it's,
yep.
yeah, it's going to be remembered.
Universal Monsters Frankenstein hardcover, which I don't remember who did Frankenstein. It's Michael Walsh who did Silver Coin and some of the other stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
And then X-Force Volume 1, which is the latest in the releases of the X-Men stuff.
Yep.
I think that's everything.
I was going to randomly mention, for fans of Tim Sale, that early work of his with the Gambit thing. Did you mention that?
Yeah.
He and Jeff Loeb, who, best known for, Long Halloween, and I guess that was their main thing. Oh, but they did all the Daredevil Yellow, Spider-Man Blue, and all that stuff at Marvel. Before they kind of were, any of that was codified, he did an X-Men project that was like a solo adventure with Gambit and Wolverine?
Oh,
yes,
yeah,
Gambit
yeah,
and Wolverine.
Yeah.
That I think has Arcade as the villain and a few creepy twists and turns that you would expect from the guy who would go on to write Long Halloween. It is not, I think, either Loeb or Sale at their peak, but it was fun. I remember enjoying it when I read it in its original format back in the day. And definitely, if you like Tim Sale, you should check it out. Gambit, for that matter.
We should also mention the giant-sized version of Batman
Hush. Oh, right,
Hush.
Yeah, I forgot. Batman Hush, if you want, you can get it at basically the art size that Jim Lee draws at.
Yeah.
The giant single issue.
It is
like
even bigger than
17.
Than the Treasury editions that we're used to seeing. It's in that ballpark, but it's a little bigger. but it's very cool looking.
All right, and because of our short schedule, that is going to be it for us this week.
Yep. Yeah, we'll do more of the stuff we normally do, talk trailers and what we're watching and all that stuff next week.
Yep. And until next time,
yo, Joe.
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.